Welcome to Finally Alive Radio with pastoral counselor Gary Harris. To find out more, please go to finallyaliveradio.com.
So let's go to Genesis 11, and we're talking still about conflict and dealing with conflict. And we've gone through our list many times. There's the godly way, there's the ungodly way. So we won't go through the list, but we'll keep keeping that in mind because we've done it so many times now. But Genesis 11, just continuing with our theme, looking at this case here. So we've just gone through Noah and the flood and all that happened there. And remember, we're still on the eisegetical side. We're not going exegetical. And we're kind of even looking at it almost like a metaphorical way. In some cases, of course, not in all cases. But anyway, 11:1, Genesis 11:1. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. So already the start's kind of interesting there. Now remember, this is after the flood. They're off. And yeah, we skip chapter 10 because those are the descendants of Noah. So those are all, if you will, the kids of Noah. So we skip that chapter because it's basically a whole bunch of names. Important chapter, but we're going a different direction right now. So now the earth had one language and the same words. That's kind of the basis here. And again, the analogy with even life today, the whole earth had one language and the same words. And if we can take this as a metaphor, if we had one language, the idea generally, right, would be that there's unity, right? We're all speaking the same language, unity, if you want to call it peace. But isn't that what we're looking for generally, right? I mean, we can even see it today, heck, even in different parties and government, different ideas. If you don't believe in God, you're trying to create generally this utopia. At least on this planet, you want it to be quote unquote perfect, right? We're trying to make it as fair as possible, right? That's a general idea. So you can see humanity wants that. They want, if you will, a heaven. So it seems to be ingrained in man that there needs to be this aspect of how do we make this happen? So let's just take that, you know, again, eisegetical, but we're just going with a thought here. The whole earth had one language and the same words. And let's even connect this to, in a sense, to Adam and Eve, they're in the garden. There's unity, there's peace there, okay? But what's the issue with peace? What's the issue with unity and peace when we're talking earth, human, flesh? When does it ever last? It never does, okay? So obviously, you guys know where the story is going, I think. Now, the whole earth had one language and the same words, okay? The idea of unity there. Verse 2, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. So interesting, regardless of peace, so this is kind of, you know, side note, we're kind of drifting off here, but our theme is conflict. But even when there's peace, you want to call it unity, whatever the case, you still have to do things. You still have to move. So if we have peace here, let's put peace and unity up here. How do you stay in that state? How do you stay there? How do you not move in this, at least in this ancient culture, but even in life today? Everything can be going right in your life, right? Let's say you have the perfect job, you have the perfect marriage, you have the perfect blah, 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 but things are constantly changing. You've probably heard that saying, the only thing constant in life is change. So how does peace and unity last? Here's your verse 2, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. So even in peace, okay, even in unity, there's still movement. You can't just sit still. That's another issue. If we sit still, not move, okay, in life, what happens? Become stagnant. That's another issue. Even in your state of perfection, or not perfection, in your state of peace. But if you do move, what happens? Well, many things can happen. Things can be better. You can maybe survive. And we're thinking ancient, if they were moving from one land to another because they ran out of water, whatever the case, so it might be a survival. So you will need to move. Another possibility, things can get worse. Lots of possibilities. So this side, there is a chance taking when you're moving. This side, you're not taking a chance, stagnant. It's eventually going to take you, if you're stagnant forever, to a type of death. It could be literal. It could be, I mean, think business. Think of anything, you know, GE. Yeah, that's a good one lately. They've been, they're really falling apart. But if we stuck to making rotary phones or whatever, I mean, I don't know if GE, I don't think GE made that. But if they just stuck to making rotary phones, that's being stagnant. What happens to that business? Does anyone even have a home phone anymore? I don't think anyone that I know does. Can't stay stagnant. In life, can you stay stagnant? If you're 3 years old, can you stay stagnant and just be three? And you can't. So this side is unrealistic. The not moving, the stagnant. It's eventually going to take you to death, obviously, to some sort of death. There must be movement in life regardless of peace. And this is important because that's, isn't that what most of us are running, and we want peace, and that's why I'm coming to Jesus, because I want peace in my life. That's great, but that isn't a good reason to come to Jesus. See, this is an important piece because people want to find, you know, rewards and candy, and this is what I want so I can come to Jesus. No, you come to Jesus because it's right. That's why you go to Jesus. You trust God because He is, and He's the greatest. Not because of the rewards that I get. Now, the rewards, of course, you guys understand this. The rewards are what? It's just the candy. It's just the extra stuff that comes along with. But what if you don't get the reward? What if you don't get that peace that you thought you would get? Does that make God less real? Does that make Jesus less effective or less real? Of course not. So we do get peace in Christ, but maybe not the peace that you want. I think there's a lot of layers to this. Do you get peace through Christ? Yes, absolutely you do. I put it this way. What's your definition of peace? Is it today's translation? Today's translation is what? Unity. Everything has to be fair. You understand, I hope. I mean, there's different ways of looking at this. And who's the judge of fair? That's the next question. You see, so you have to dig a little bit on this. But even in peace, even when we have Christ, you still have to move. You still have to risk. And I think that's an important word to put here. When there's movement, there's always risk. And it may not go the way you want it. You may not come out of this with all your limbs, but part of the game, part of life, part of risk. You don't sit still anyway. And we have to realize the feeling, okay? The feeling of peace, it comes and goes. It's just going to happen. In fact, look at Ecclesiastes. I think this is an amazing book, obviously. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 4 says, "A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Sun rises, the sun goes down, hastens to the places where it rises. The wind blows to the south, goes around the north, and around goes the wind. And on its circuits, the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again." The idea of seasons, there's just differences. And obviously, you guys know chapter 3, right? A time, the old Beatles song, right? Well, let's just go to it. Why not? Haven't been there in a while, right? So let's go to Ecclesiastes 3. "For everything there's a season, verse 1, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born, time to die, time to plant, time to pluck, time to kill, time to heal." You know, you guys know the old Beatles song, all right? But you guys understand it, huh?
Birds.
Oh, it was the birds? Oh, I thought that was the Beatles. Oh, okay, the birds. Well, shows my age then, right? Okay, so it's the birds. All this time I thought it was the Beatles. Huh?
Conflict.
No, there you go. We've created conflict. There you go. So, time to weep, time to laugh, time to mourn, time to dance. So, seasons. There's just going to be these seasons in life, and we just have to be okay with the conflict of these seasons. Ups and downs are going to happen. You are not going to have the peace that you think you want or you deserve, but you have peace in Christ. Okay, this is a kind of side note to what we're talking about in Genesis, but the peace that we need to be seeking is in Christ, and that's tough. And as we continue, I hope it'll make better sense. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, I'm going to go to verse 12. What are they called, the birds? I've never even heard of them, the birds. All right, Ecclesiastes 2, 12, I love this. Because this is important, because in Proverbs it talks about wisdom, right? Wisdom is so important. I would agree. It's incredibly important. One of the most important things, obviously, second, third, and fourth to God and Christ and the Holy Spirit. Verse 12 says, "So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. Then I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness." Makes perfect sense. Verse 14, "The wise person has his eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceived that the same event happens to all of them." I love that, because it kind of connects to what we're talking about. It doesn't matter if you're wise or not, you're still going to go through your seasons of life. It's just going to happen. So to try to hold on to this peace and unity, human peace and unity, I have to make that clear. Peace and unity of our own type. And let's go back to Genesis. I'm going somewhere with this for you guys. It makes better sense if we go here. Genesis 11. Let's go to verse 3. "And they said to one another, come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen. It's basically asphalt, right? Basically. So for mortar, yes. So look at the intentions. Good intentions? Yeah, let's build stuff. That's not a bad thing. Okay, so building is not a bad thing. So another aspect here are intentions. Okay, intentions can be good. And verse 4, here's your kicker, right? This is one of the main verses in this chapter here. Then they said, so after we're talking about bricks and building things, then they said, come let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and stop right there. That's the problem. Not so much the city, not so much the tower. The tower with its tops in the heavens. That's an issue. So here's a little exegetical. Back then, they would believe that, obviously, where does God and or the gods live? In the heavens. Where are the heavens? Well, where the mountains are. That's the highest peak. So where would the gods be, whether in the heavens or where they connected to the mountains? That's just the way that they saw it. So if they're in the mountains, why? Because it's up high and I can't get there and it's impossible to get there. What is man trying to do here? Trying to build what? A tower with its tops in the heavens. That is saying, I want to be connected. I want to make it my own way, perhaps to create or help or enhance my own peace for my own. In fact, look at the unity part. I'm going to show you here. And let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. There's your unity. That would create conflict, right? If I don't have my unity, because we'll be dispersed, that's an issue. But who is doing it? Is this God's plan? Absolutely not. And here's the giveaway. It was right in the middle. Let us make a name for ourselves. So we have a whole bunch of issues here in this one little verse. Let's build ourselves a city and a tower with its tops in the heavens. Number one problem. You were saying you want to infiltrate where God is. Okay, that's problem number one. Building this kind of tower would say I have power over the God or the gods. That's the problem. Remember, do you guys remember the term? It's called a ziggurat. That's what they call this tower. Ziggurats, and they were always this holy place, and they liked to build it very high because that's how you get the attention of the gods, or you invite the gods there to a degree, sometimes to control and or to appease. All right? So, tower with its tops in the heavens, problem number one. Let us make a name for ourselves. That is one of the biggest problems, and we're going to probably stick to mostly that. Now, in the Hebrew, making a name, especially for yourself, becomes a very big issue. If you look at Genesis 6:4, just a few chapters back, Genesis 6:4 says, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them, these were the mighty men who were of old, the men of renown. It's literally the same word that's used. It's Shem, name. Shem, okay? Mighty men who are of old, men of renown. There's a problem here. And let's put it in big letters here. Something about names. So let's see who have a name or a renowned name. Well, let's even go there. So obviously who? The Nephilim. And what was happening with the Nephilim? And if you remember Enoch, we read that a couple times. Here you come, and let's make our own plan, and let's run the joint, right? Let's run Earth the way we want to. That's what Genesis 6 is all about. What is Genesis 11 doing? It's almost the same thing, but on human form. Let's run this joint the way we want to. I know God said all that stuff, but let's build the ziggurat. Let's do it our way, the way we want to. And then, exactly the same thing as a Nephilim, let's make a name for ourselves. This is one of the hardest, I think, conflicts that we will face. Yourself, your own name, your own will, your own whatever you want because you think it's right, or because I want to keep the peace or the unity, or your good intentions, okay? Your good intentions. Oh, we have such good intentions. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's God's intentions. I think that's an important thing to realize here. The name, I think that's such an important piece. Let's look at Genesis 10:8. What's that say there? So we have a whole bunch of names, right? And then verse 8 says, Cush, father Nimrod. If you know anything about Nimrod, in fact, that name, we call people a Nimrod. I think it comes from here because Nimrod was one of the worst, right? He was horrible at what he did. He was totally opposite of God, if you will. He was the first on earth to be a mighty man. It's the exact same words. Something about you making your own name, if you will, in a sense, you being your own God, all right? And I think it's even worse than that, the way that they would say it. The mighty man. He wanted to be a mighty man. He wants his own name. Exact same thing as a Nephilim. Check it out. Isaiah 14. You guys know this one very well. 12, the famous verses here. Isaiah 14:12 says, how you are fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn. How you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. Does this sound like a person who wants a renowned name. It does. It definitely does. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will make myself like the Most High. Does he have any respect for the name? In fact, Hashem, right? That's a famous Hebrew way, you know, of even talking about God. The name, if you will, the main name, right? God. I will make myself like the Most High. This has nothing to do with our point, but I think it's worth reading because it's a great kick. But you are brought down to Sheol, to the far reaches of the pit. Those who see you will stare at you and ponder over you. Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms, who made the world like a desert and overthrew its cities, who did not let his prisoners go home? All of the kings of the nations lie in glory, each in his own tomb. But you're cast out away from your grave like a loathed branch, clothed with the slain, those pierced by the sword, who go down to the stones of the pit, like a dead body trampled underfoot. You will not be joined with them in burial, because you have destroyed your land. You have slain your people. I love this part. May the offspring of evildoers never more be named. Something about a name. God has a big thing about names. And if you just think about this, kind of in our own world, your name is very important to you. What is your name? It's your credibility. What happens when you want to go buy something, a big ticket item? You want to buy a car? What do they do? The first thing, run your credit, right? Credibility, right? I need to know, okay, can you afford this? Why? Credibility. Your name is very important. Okay, so let's not forget that. So why does God need credit? No, but kind of yes. So let's just kind of go with this. Isaiah 48, notice what he does. Chapter 48, verse 1 says, "Hear this, O house of Jacob, who are called by the name of Israel, and who came from the waters of Judah, who swear by the name of the Lord." What do we do? Even when, you know, if you want to cast out a demon, what do? You call on the name. Something about that name. So there's power, it sounds like, in names. "And who came from the waters of Judah, who swear by the name of the Lord, and confess the God of Israel, but not in truth or right." So we have an issue there, don't we? "For they call themselves after the holy city, and stay themselves on the God of Israel. The Lord of hosts is his name." So name, very, very important. Go to verse 8. "You've never heard, you have never known from of old, your ear has not been opened. For I knew that you would surely deal treacherously, and that from before birth you were called a rebel. For my name's sake, I defer my anger." His name, God's name, he considers even his own name holy. It is, absolutely is, and no question about that. There's no argument about that. "For my name's sake, I defer my anger. For the sake of my praise, I restrain it for you, that I may not cut you off." Now, when you're trying to make a name, or these guys in Genesis 11, what do they say? "We want to make a name for ourselves." What are you saying? Are you saying the name that you already have isn't good enough? Why would you have to build a ziggurat? Why would you have to build that? Why do you have to do any of that? When God's already saved you, and here you are, you're on the other side of the flood. What are you doing? Are you trying to create your own peace, your own unity, because you don't want to be spread out, right? Diversified, you want to moved around? You want to create your unity? I wonder if the church does this today. That's a scary thought. Does the church do this? Do they try to create their own peace? I think they have to a degree of creating a different kind of Jesus. Jesus wasn't just sweet, nice, you know, and all the pretty stuff. He had the other side. He had the whipping with the cords. He had some harsh words to say to the Pharisees in Matthew 23. You can't create your own peace. You can't create your own unity. It's got to be the peace that only comes from God. And if you create your own, it's almost like creating your own name. As if God's name isn't good enough. That's crazy thinking. Verse 10 says, "Behold, I have refined you, but not as silver. I have tried you in the furnace of affliction for my own sake. For my own sake, I do it. For how should my name be profaned? My glory I will not give to another." Why wouldn't he give his glory to anyone else? Because no one else can carry it. No one else can do what he does. And he won't mess up his name. You know why? Because that's his reputation. That's why I'll give it to the Jews. They don't say his name because it's that holy. I get it. I understand. I respect it. But you're allowed to say his name. You know why? Because you're his son. So that's where I'll differ on that. But it's so holy. It deserves to be written and then breaking the pen because it's that holy. You don't mess with his name. Let's look at Psalm 106, just to go with our theme of name here. So Psalm 106, you know, talking about just different things of the forefathers and things of that sort. Verse 7, he says, our fathers, when they were in Egypt, did not consider your wondrous works. They did not remember the abundance of your steadfast love, but rebelled by the sea at the Red Sea. Yet he saved them for his name's sake, that he might make known his mighty power. Everything is in the name, everything. Your credibility is in that name. That's why you don't mess with God's name. So I want you guys to see all this in connection with Genesis. And obviously, let's go to Philippians chapter 2. So just two quick verses in this one, really quick. Philippians chapter 2, verse 8 says, and being found in human form, speaking of Jesus, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. This is Jesus. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him what? The name that is above every name. Every knee shall bow, every tongue will confess, whether you like it or not. Names are a big deal for God. To a degree, our names are important, okay? You don't want to be known as, drunk Gary, Gary the druggie, okay? You don't want to be known as those kinds of names, right? Obviously, that is not good. Again, side note, I know you guys know this, but does that make you unqualifiable to go to heaven? No, it doesn't. Even if you've got a bad name on earth, okay, your name can still be in the book of life, so... Total side note, I know. Names are important. Look, your name's important, okay? I'm not trying to put you down, but there's a name that's greater than all of ours, okay? That's the point, especially with Genesis 11, all right? But speaking of names, or let's go with the idea of name, or more so your will. God's will or my will? God's will or your will? What will you do? Will you do his will? Will you do your will? Will you do the will? Because, hey, man, if we can create peace on earth, oh, man, that would be great. Maybe we can create unity by doing, I don't know, making something fair. Fair wages. Does that even exist? No such thing. There's no way you can create. In fact, it's been tried many times and it never works. Look at Matthew 16. Can you pay everyone the same dollar amount? That's impossible. And even if you raise the wages. In fact, they've actually seen this. When they raise the wages, I forgot where it was. San Francisco or Washington? So they raised the wages, but the cost of the goods went up too. So, I mean, kind of defeats the purpose there. You're getting paid more, but you're also paying more for the product. So anyway, forgive me for being logical. Matthew 16, 24. So this is your will versus God's will here. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. If you care about your name, I would say, in a sense, give it up. If you care about your will, great. Give it up. Give it to God. Because this right here, this is the riches. This is what riches are. This is how you can get true peace. It's wild to see these people. They make so much money. Just people I've seen in life. They make so much money. They're rich. They're rich. I mean, you're thinking, oh my gosh, if I had just one of your paychecks, man, I'd be good. I'd be set for a long time. They have no peace. They have no peace. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. So money clearly does not bring peace. And they're getting that every month. So what? So it's not through money. In fact, Ecclesiastes, if you get a chance, read just through the book of Ecclesiastes. I love what he says. I was reading it a while back, just a couple days ago, actually. And what a great reminder. I tried everything, he says, right? I've tried it all. I went crazy. I went, drinking. I did partying. I did the girls, plenty of girls, some girls, a lot of girls, that kind of girl, this kind of girl. Had money, spent money. I did it all. It was all vanity. It was nothing. In fact, I even use my wisdom. We just read that. I use my wisdom. Isn't that the greatest thing? Yes, wisdom is better. But even that, at the end of the day, who cares? Well, I guess we can read the last sentences of Ecclesiastes later. But anyway, Matthew 16, 25, says, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. You want peace, there's your peace. You've got to let go. You've got to let go of you. We cannot be a Tower of Babel kind of people, all right? We cannot seek our own peace and unity. Our peace comes from God. Our peace comes through Christ, resurrected Christ. Verse 26, for what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come with his angels. On and on it goes. But what good is any of it? Let's go back to Genesis 11. So tangent there on names, but so important. Your name, your will. Let's even go there. Your will. Only way you can get true peace is by letting go of your own will. It's easy. I'll explain it to you. The logic is so simple. Here's my will. Get a job. Great. That's a good thing. Good intentions, right? You get a job. Wow, I like my job, but I want to make more money. That's my will. Okay, good intentions, make more money. I get there, what happens? Humanity kicks in. I start to compare. Wow, they've got a fancier car. Now I need to make more money. Get a better job, get more money, or do whatever, that, you know. That's just humanity. I don't put it down because that's what humanity does. But I will never find peace. I will never find peace, ever, 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 ever. What's that old saying? I don't know if this is real, but I remember hearing, oh, they asked this rich person, you know, you've got billions of dollars, and you know, how much more do you need? And they think, and they say, just a little more. You know, silly. I don't know if it's a joke or not, but that's so true. That's humanity. That's what we do. You get one, you want two. You get the nice car, you're sick of it in 3 weeks, right? So chasing things in life, anything in life, your hopes and dreams, not a bad thing, don't give up on them, but that is not the answer. You will not find peace in them. Only place you can find peace is Jesus. Only place. Anyway, Genesis 11, we were in verse 4 here. And let's think of the logic here. Then verse 4, he says, then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its tops in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. Again, I'm taking it maybe at face value. Part of the reason for this tower and this city is so that we're not dispersed. Okay, we want to keep everyone together. Great idea. Good intentions. I like that. That sounds beautiful on the surface. Not God's plans, though. And by the way, how big does this city have to be? Because there's going to come a time when we're not going to fit in here anymore. You know, give it 100 years, give it 200 years, give it 500 years. The city is going to start to deteriorate. What are you going to do with that? Build higher? Okay, how much higher can you go? I mean, there's going to be some limitations. You are going to have to disperse eventually. By the way, that's kind of what God wanted. In fact, you don't believe me, you'll see in a minute. So verse 5, and the Lord came down to see the city. And notice, where did God come from? He came down. Very important. He came down to the city. That's what God does. He comes down. And I say that because that's the way they would see it. God never just shows that he's coming from up to down. Lord came down to the city and the tower which the children of man had built. The Lord said, behold, there are one people and they have all one language. So, I mean, side note, we can say if they have one language, there's a lot of agreement. There's a lot of unity. Okay. So what's the problem with unity if it's human form? It can go any direction, right? It could be good, but it could be bad. They have one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. What's he saying? This is the beginning of the destruction of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Why? Because they're on the same page. They have unity. It's not that they're unstoppable. It's that they're all on the same page. They're going the wrong way. They're all going the wrong way. That's a problem. You won't be able to stop this because they're all on the same page. They want to go the wrong way. That's the problem. Verse 7, come, let us go down and there confuse our language so that they may not understand one another's speech. Why would God do this? I thought God was loving. He is loving. He loves them so much, he confuses their language to save some at least. Otherwise, if he left it this way, they're all done. They're all done because they're after what? Their own name. So is God that evil now? No, he's not. He actually had to do this to save some. In fact, if you read Genesis 12, the man named Abram, we'll talk about him another time, but just saying, he saves someone in the next chapter. Isn't that crazy? So he confuses the speech. Verse 8. And by the way, will God bless your name? Will he bless your name if you're doing it your own way, your own will? He's not going to bless your plans. He's not going to bless the church's plans if it's for their own name. If God isn't the centerpiece, if Jesus is not the centerpiece, it's not going to be blessed by God. And I'm not saying a church can't be big. I'll say this from my own experience. I've seen giant churches who are dead, completely dead. And I was just telling Pastor about this. Dead. I mean, you talk to them. The Sunday school stories that, you know, you'd learn in Sunday school, they don't even know it. It's heartbreaking. But what good is, you know, your big tower, I guess pun intended, if there's no God there, if there's no Jesus there? So God's not going to bless that. That isn't God blessed. That's man blessed. You can build your towers as big as you want. There doesn't mean that there is a God there. There isn't God there. Come, let us go down, confuse our language. Verse 8. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth. Oh my gosh, look at that. They were so worried about being dispersed. And what does God do? God shows up and he disperses them. You can't outsmart God. I don't care how much peace and unity you want to talk. I don't care about your good intentions. I don't care what your plans are. If God has a direction, he's going to go. It's just going to happen whether you like it or not. Why? For his namesake, for his purpose. He knows the direction. He knows how the story ends. You go against it, good luck. That's all I can tell you. But isn't it interesting? It starts off with the intention of we don't want to be dispersed. And God does exactly that, because that is not part of God's plans. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Why would God do that? Why would he disperse them all over the earth? Number one, that's his land. He can do what he wants. And that was the plan. What does Jesus tell us? What's the Great Commission? Go out into all the world. All the world, not your little city, not your little tower. That's been the plan. That's been the plan since Garden of Eden. I want you to take over. This is all yours. I want the entire place to be you guys running this place, but worshiping me. That's been the plan. That's been the plan. What is this? This is not God's plan, right? What does he do? He disperses them. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there, the Lord dispersed them. By the way, repetition there. Kind of a little kick to the face there. The same thing you didn't want, God did. And from there, the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. So here's your conflict. Your conflict is you, your own self. You will have to put yourself down to save. You have to let go of your will. You have to let go of your own direction and follow God's and follow Christ's. God forbid we end up that way because of our own idea of peace or our own idea of unity. That's a conflict because it might look good on paper. It might look good. Oh, wow. I mean, everyone's on board. Why? That's a good point. Well, everyone thinks it's a good thing to do. So what does God say about it? What is God's direction? That's important because we have to realize what is God's... If we don't understand God's direction, what direction are we going in? Obviously, our own, which means we have to be in touch with God. We have to be talking to him constantly. We have to be in prayer constantly. Otherwise, we end up with a type of Tower of Babel. And it happens. It's happening now. It happens everywhere. We want to do it our own way. We want to control it our own way. We can fix the climate, right? Of course, climate change. As if we're God. I'm not saying let's be irresponsible. I'm just saying let's not try to act like God. That's my point. So be aware. Be aware, guys. Let's not create our own towers of Babel, whether it's physical or even in our own hearts.
Thank you for listening to today's message. 2 Corinthians 9:7 tells us that each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. If this message has been a blessing to you, we ask that you be a cheerful giver to this ministry by going to finallyalive.com/give. We'll meet you again next time as we grow together and learn to be finally alive in Christ.